Dog Talk Radio, Four Sports Club. Thanks for hanging out with us, sticking with us tonight. Obviously, we are a little later than usual. We had some stuff come up. Luckily, it was not technical glitches. The first. Had some stuff come up. We were not able to get the show up and going until right now. But here we are. Now, not sure if the other guys will be able to join me. We all had things that just kind of came up out of the blue. I was able to still join you guys, though, as we see the Titans and Jaguars preparing to take the field here in a minute. I'm going to start with our picks because I don't want you guys to think that we have some sort of unfair advantage or anything of the like. And actually, joining us at this point is the Coach Haywood Hill. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How about yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. Like I just told our listening audience, better late than never, and we're rocking and ready to go.
All right, great. Who's on with us besides yourself and myself?
Just us at the moment that I know of.
Okay.
I am traveling, so
please forget there are some gap times between my response time just because of my traveling right now. But I am here and I am available to help with the show tonight.
And we definitely appreciate that. You know, that's what people don't realize is that even aside from all the stuff we do here at Impact Media, all four of us do almost completely different things. We're always traveling. We're always all over the place. So it's always a real treat when we can get together and talk about some of the main things. And, I mean, I don't know how prepared you are to talk about a particular team associated with some dairy products, but when you're ready, I'm ready.
Well, I'm ready. We can just start from the top. I know there were some things that you put out that you want to discuss. And the first thing that you talked about was, and I don't know if you've gotten to that topic just as of yet, and that was teams under pressure. Do they panic when they have a bad game? I don't know if you've covered that as of yet, but if you'd like to start there and just come down, we can do that, or wherever you'd like to start, more than ready to have the conversation.
I have no problem starting right there. Like I said, we just had started the show, so that's a perfect time for to join in. And, yeah, I had put out, you know, because a lot of times with our topic sheets, yeah, we'll put – hey, this team beat that team, or hey, this story happened, or that story happened. This is something I've noticed here recently, or I don't know why I've just recently noticed it. It goes on a lot. And it's a question that I pose to the three of you guys on top of myself, and that's if a team loses a big game, why do we almost automatically assume that they choked or panicked under pressure and blew it when maybe they just had a bad night, maybe they got beat? You don't necessarily choke every time you lose. And especially here locally with the Falcons, it seems like anytime the Falcons lose, oh, well, they're choke artists. Well, what if they just got outplayed?
Okay. Well, I'm most definitely equipped to answer that question. I think it is the answer is D, all of the above. I think a lot of times what happens is you have to look at a couple of things when you're looking at if a team is choking under pressure versus if a team is having a bad game. Well, there are some indicators that let you know that. One of the things that you look at is how many times consistently have they lost under pressure. And that's one of the things that you have to look at. The other thing is, hold on 1 second, Papa Jeremy.
Yeah. Coach, just taking a small break, as he said, because he is traveling, so we want to make sure that he's doing that.
That,
go ahead.
Sorry about that, Jeremy. But, again, the indicators are a couple of things. First of all, if a team is choking, you will see that because when teams are playing close games, they can't seem to pull them out the clutch. Those are choke mechanisms. If a team is having a bad game, then you'll be able to see that because that's why they have that nice little column called turnovers. And that is normally the indicator if a team is having – if they show – consistently that they are rarely turning over the ball, are quite consistent, over 50% with third down conversions, as we're speaking of football, then those are the things that you can look at. But when you start looking at play calling, when you start looking at sack ratios, when you start looking at things of that nature, they can't convert very well on third down. They're not at 50% at fourth down. The play calling is not there. Injuries play a role. So all of these three things play factors. But again, the one thing that they all share in common is that they're professionals. And mm-hmm. so the pressure of being under pressure, it just comes along as the nature of the beast. It's one of those things that come along with the game. And so in the case of Atlanta, and more specifically, as you spoke with them, I think they're faced with a couple of things. I think some of it can be play calling. I think some of it is trust. You know, you have to have the trust factor involved with your team, and you have to believe in what you're doing. And I've gone to a couple of Falcon games this year and watched them, and I would comfortably say that it is all of the above. Some of the things are plaguing them that are plaguing some other teams. Now, in the case of some other teams that are already eliminated from playoff contention, one of the things I look at is the personnel. You know, do they have the personnel right now to compete at that level? All of those guys are professionals, and they've all been evaluated to play at that level, so they all have the ability to play at that level. But then you have to also look at if a team is young, you know, if they're in the rebuilding phase, or if they're at the point where the team has kind of got long in the tooth with the roster, and they are in the process of trying to get out of some of those contracts so that they can start the rebuilding process. But I think, yeah, you can tell when a team chokes. It's quite obvious when they choke. They're not doing some things consistently enough to keep themselves in a competitive mode. And that's how I determine choke from panicking and just flat outright get played.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think that's the best definition. That's part of why I'm glad I was able to ask you directly like that. And you can choose to take the fifth on this particular part of it, but would you say, because I'll weigh in right after you do, I don't think in particular that the Falcons are choking at the moment. I think they are very young because of injuries. Georgia State had the similar problem this year when, you know, half your starters, especially on defense, are on the IR. You know, you're playing people that are fresh off the bus, as we were saying, that just arrived maybe a couple of days ago. It's the same thing that happened with Washington and Mark Sanchez. He had been in Washington, D.C. for 6 days before he had to play on Monday night. So, me personally, I think it's just the injuries. They're playing a lot of people who aren't used to playing in these positions, and I would say the Falcons are not choking right now, but what do you think?
Okay, well, this is exactly what I think. I think that they're a young football team, which is not a bad thing. I think now I would put them in choke category for this particular reason. As I had spoken one time before, and Reggie and I had this particular discussion, I said the one thing that the Falcons will have in its advantage in the second half of the season is that all of these young guys that they're playing would now have had to gain experience. You know, they go in and, you know, practice is a very unique thing in the NFL. And so I said, well, a lot of these guys are playing special teams that only run it down for maybe 6 to 8 plays of a game. Then they have to go down and play special teams and turn around and play at the position. And I said, I see a lot of that. I said, but give them 3 to 4 games, and at that point they should be right where they need to be. At that point they would have been able to condition their bodies to be able to play in a full football game, because that's the whole idea. The difference is when you're actually you know, playing like that in the game, that's something totally different than when you're just kind of out there, you know, doing special teams. So I said they've had more than enough time to now get themselves together. After about 4 games, their body has already started to muscle memory what they need to do. And so now those guys, I don't consider those guys fresh off the bus anymore. They've seen enough film, they've had enough practice, but more importantly, they've played in enough games now to where they should, you know, be a little bit more comfortable with what they have to do and their responsibilities and their assignments. So, again, at this point, I think some of it has just been too conservative in the play calling. Trust factor's not been there. And then just some of it can be, I would consider, just lackadaisical effort. You know, I mean, you're a professional. You get paid to do it. And so it doesn't matter how many plays, and I used to tell players this all the time, it doesn't matter how many plays you play in the game, it's what you do. Did you do your job when you were in there? And that's what you're held accountable for. You're not held accountable for the things that you're not responsible for. You're only held accountable for the things that you are.
All right. I think that's fair. I think that definitely makes a lot of sense. And, you know, as I've said before on this show, we agree a lot on different things, but we like to show all the different sides. And even though we don't necessarily agree on if they're choking or not, you know, it's up to the other people to decide. I think you made a pretty compelling argument, though. It's slightly swaying me, but not enough to completely agree yet. But, God, I was going somewhere with this. You know, I would agree with you, at least the Falcons' performance versus Baltimore over the weekend. They did lose 26-16. I don't think it should have been as close as it was. Oh, I know where I was going. I don't think it should have been as close as it was. I agree. I can't blame Matt Ryan a whole lot because apparently he doesn't have a lot of veto power. He has a little bit at the line, but not much. He's pretty much – he has a lot in common with Aaron Rodgers at this point, except for Aaron can actually call the actual other plays. But it seems like Sarkisian either can't get Matt to buy into his system or his system is not good for Matt's skills. Somehow there's a connection that's missing there. I think a lot of it's play call. I think it goes back to the fact that Dan Quinn lets his coordinators be coordinators and doesn't overrule them. We saw that the Super Bowl a couple years ago when he should have stepped in and said, hey, knock that off. Go back to what we were doing because it was working. I do like Dan Quinn. I think he's going to be a great coach. I think he's a pretty good coach now. But the question I pose to you, do you think Sarkisian is with this team next year?
No, I do not.
I agree. And it's not his fault. He it's good that we were able to help him get established and maybe get back in the coaching world. It's just such a bad transition from what a Kyle Shanahan does with the explosiveness. He's kind of that new age. They like to give McVay all the credit, but they always say, who's the Sean McVay before Sean McVay? Well, it was Kyle Shanahan who had these innovative, and it's the Josh McDaniels. A lot of people have already forgotten about him because it's not the shiny new toy. But I think Sark will find his way into either another college gig or he'll be a coordinator somewhere else. But, yeah, they've got to change up the focus and either find somebody who can work with Matt or potentially look into will the successor work with that system.
Well, I agree. I think that has a lot to do with that, plays into it. And I think, again, I've always said that, you know, one of the Falcons' Achilles heel has always been that they never had a two-quarterback system from a standpoint that they had someone that can challenge at that position.
Right. Yeah, I don't know that Matt's had anybody to push him in his entire career. I can't think of they had the third-string guy that we all liked a couple years ago, but they let him off into the oblivion, I guess. I can't think of the guy's name anymore, but there hadn't been really anybody to ever push him in his career, and I think that's part of why we always go so back and forth on Matt Ryan. Is if there was somebody to push him, I think he would be so much better than he is.
I agree. I think that's always been one of the positions that Atlanta has only put a franchise tag on loosely at that position where they did not challenge anybody. They either would replace or they would just ride that person out until they felt that it was time to move on to somebody else.
Right. And that's actually something I was going to bring up. We may do that instead of getting into some of these games. We can kind of go back and forth on this. I think we can easily eliminate or easily throw out two names or two teams real quickly. But without going team by team, just off the top of our head, teams that need to draft their quarterback successors this year. I think we can obviously just to throw out, I think Atlanta and Green Bay need to already be trying to get that guy in the building. I think we can easily say that. And I'm actually going to say that Dallas needs to do the same thing.
Wow, so you're this early on Dallas, huh?
It's nothing personal to Dak. I've always felt like he's the bridge between Romo and the next big franchise guy. Like Dak, I don't have a problem with Dak, but I don't know that he's that next big thing. And it doesn't have to be another Romo. It doesn't have to be up to that caliber. We don't have to have another Troy Aikman. We don't have to have a Tom Brady or nothing like that. It's just I feel like we need to have somebody just that extra notch above.
All right. Well, that's what the draft is all about, and that's what scouts are all about, and that's where their responsibility comes into play. Their responsibility is to go out and continue to have to assess the market value of collegiate players as well as those that are in the free agent market to
right.
make sure that they keep, you know, budgets down and they find the best bang for their buck. So I think there are a lot of quarterbacks out there. It's just finding the right mixture of quarterback to offensive coordinator to quarterback coach ratio. And once you can
right.
find that perfect fit, then you can have what you're looking for. But I think at all positions you have to challenge. And if I may take a step back just for a second, I think that's
sure.
what makes, in the college level, that's what makes Alabama so successful. Because one of Coach Saban's statements to all of his players, even those that he's recruiting, that if you're afraid of competition, then Alabama's not the school for you. And,
right.
and it was proven just in the SEC championship where Jalen Hurts easily could have gone to another school
uh-huh.
and very well possibly might after this year. But he proved that he wasn't afraid of the competition. And when the time came, he stepped up and proved why he was a Division I football player in that throw that he made for the touchdown that inevitably won the SEC championship game. So those are the things that I point to as the tangible evidence that you have to look at. In the pros, it's a little bit different. Again, you have but to win, and again, let's just look at the Patriots. They've done it similar to
mm-hmm.
a college type of school that Alabama has. Everybody competes on that football team, and again, they have to buy into that system, they have to believe in that system, and then they have to work within that system. And even with Tom Brady, as great of a quarterback as he is, was on suspension last year. You know, again, with four-game suspension, Coach Belichick proved that he won three of those four games with his second and third string quarterback.
Right. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, like I said, without having to go team by team, I just find it really interesting that every team in the NFC South, obviously New Orleans, Carolina, Atlanta, need to be thinking about the successors to the guys they have now. But on the flip side of that, Tampa, they need a starter and a potential backup unless they're going to keep Fitzpatrick around long enough, because I think Jameis is the latest Josh Freeman down there. Tampa seems to never get that one right. Maybe they're able to get a free agent. Maybe they can get Teddy Bridgewater, because I really doubt he sticks around New Orleans, because it's going to be at least, I think, 3 or 4 years before they're going to need another starter.
Right, and I agree with you. And I think, again, it goes back to my statement earlier about you got to find the right – the chemistry has to also be within the coaching staff and the players.
Right.
So that part of it plays a huge role as well. If there's not a good, great relationship there, regardless of the athletic talent, if you're not happy with what you're doing, then you're not going to be able to perform at the highest level that you're capable of. And so I think that has a lot of plays a big role in it as well. Again, you know, speaking of Atlanta earlier, one of the things I found intriguing when I was at the last game was that there was a 4th-and-1 opportunity for Atlanta, and the play call was a dive to the running back. Well, mathematically, it didn't even add up, because now you got to understand that the running back is 5 yards off the line of scrimmage. You're trying to get 1 yard. Your quarterback is sitting at the line of scrimmage at a zero, okay, what we call a zero. So at that point, you just push past behind your center and pick up your first down. There's no need for you to try to – there's nothing that you're going to get that deep in the backfield, because your running backs are not premier runners. They're not your Marshawn Lynch's of his time and Adrian Peterson's, and they're not those type of running backs as of right now. So I didn't even quite understand the play call at that point.
Yeah.
From a defensive mind, being that I've been a defensive coordinator, I didn't see how any of that was going to even ever work. just at all. I mean, the probability of getting him 5 yards from the line of scrimmage to get you 1 yard, he has to get at least 2 to make it clear without the chains versus a quarterback sneaking 1 yard and it's obvious. So it's things like that, too, that can hurt a team. You know, if you don't believe in your play calling, you don't have to have all the plays in the world. Your playbook don't have to be 300 plays.
Right.
But if they believe in every play that they're calling and the unit believes that they can get it done and they believe in that play and it makes sense to them, then that's where you get the best productivity out of them. And see, that's why I point back to the Patriots. They don't have a lot of superstars. They really don't.
Right.
But what they do, they have a lot of guys who believe in what they're doing as a unit and as a team. And that's why they're successful at what they do. Year in and year out, that's why they're successful.
Exactly. And only because a lot of people have asked and text line and all that. Real quickly, want to go over these and either shoot them down or propel them if you're ready to make those statements. Are you in trying to be the next Green Bay head coach?
No. I am so far away from probably being even thought about on that list. But I'm sure that search is going to be very intense. That search is going to be very methodical because that organization requires and demands a lot. As all organizations do, that's not slighting anybody else's organization. But again, Green Bay has a huge, rich tradition about mm-hmm. getting things done, and one of their things is that they have to make the playoffs. I mean, they don't care if they get in as a wild card. The attitude is make the playoffs, and they're not going to tolerate as an organization not being in the playoffs 3-4 years in a row. It's just not going to happen for them. So, that's one of the things when you look at Coach McCarthy's tenure there, and he had a long tenure, and he was mm-hmm. able to do some things there, make playoffs, get a Super Bowl, do some things in 13 years. But again, when you start looking at last year and then, struggling the year before and then actually, being put in a situation this year of struggling, possibly not getting in, then – that was the inevitable was going to happen. And unfortunately, that just goes along. That's again, one of those things that goes along with the business. But I'm sure that he will most definitely bounce back. And if not in a coordinator position, very well might find himself in another head coaching position. I thought it was kind of interesting that it took place right after the game. Normally, the protocol is that something like that in the NFL doesn't happen to at the end of the season. Right. Unless something else is going on from a medical standpoint with a coach, a head coach. But again, I tip my hat to him for being able to spend 13 years. That's incredible to be able to spend 13 years with an organization like that at any position in the NFL. 13 years is a long time to be at one organization and to be able to accomplish the things that he was able to do. So, I tip my hat to him. And again, we'll see what Green Bay does next. That's going to be the next chapter. Who's going to be that coach that can come in now and rally the troops and put them back into championship mode?
Oh, yeah. If, we'll have our people try to reach out to Mike McCarthy's people because he would be among friends and fans of his work and, much respect for him. I get it that they want to try to move in a different direction. I get that whole thing. But, yeah, like you said, 13 years, the guy is super smart. He's a football guy. He's going to land on his feet real easily. In fact, if Mike McCarthy's people are listening, or Mike, if you're listening, because I'm sure this is your favorite football show as well, which we appreciate, we don't even have to talk about Green Bay. We could talk about flowers and cotton candy if you want to, but, We'll look into something like that. The other rumors that some people wanted me to address is if you're not taking the Packers head coaching gig, are you, in fact, maybe going to Tampa Bay or Cleveland for the same position?
Again, that would be on the wish list. That would be on the wish list. But, again, those are going to be situations, too, where
you know, those organizations are going to be most definitely doing some interviewing, and it's just going to be interesting to see what happens at the end of the season, especially when teams become mathematically out of the equation, what those organizations and those GMs are going to be rapidly doing to get head coaches in there and get players signed and get ready for the draft.
Oh, exactly. And yes, for the person who also caught that, you did say no to the Packers, but you did not give a definitive yes or no to the other two. So there is always a chance, guys. That's why you need to pay attention to this show. You never know what's going to actually be said or what could happen. But, no, I always like to throw those out this time of year. You know, the launch of this whole show started right around as a handful of years ago when I did a short just about the coaching carousel that I think you joined us right after that. So I always like about this time of year to throw those out. Let's see, where do we want to go? I think we got enough into the Packers that I think we've addressed majority of their stuff, and we want to dig into that later. I do know breaking news right now that yesterday Kelvin Benjamin was released by the Bills, and as of a few minutes ago, he has signed with the Chiefs, so I'm not sure where in the world he's going to play there. I thought they already had about 15 receivers, but apparently they have 16 now.
Well, again, you're looking at teams who are looking to build themselves for postseason play. And Benjamin joining KC would be as equivalent as having the receiver that joined the New Orleans Saints that got hurt. You're looking at insurance policies. They do know that they've asked a lot of their receivers this year. When Mahomes really putting the ball there to them, and you probably got some guys dinged up right now, but you also need another guy with veteran experience, A, and B, more importantly, what he brings in his resume is that he's played in a Super Bowl. So, again, you're just adding that extra piece that you might need because Benjamin's big enough to even play tight end. So, if they decide to just kind of put some wrinkles in their offense and move him to a tight end spot, now, mind you, he's a receiver, but, again, if you put him in, what linebacker can cover him? I'm sure they have some things that they're thinking about. And Coach Reese has some things that he has, you know, in his arsenal as to where he feels very strong about Benjamin fitting into their system.
Right. Yeah, because it was one of those, actually on my way to the studio a little while ago, it was, hey, Kelvin Benjamin is talking to the Chiefs. And then it was like 30 minutes later, hey, they signed him. And I was like, well, Andy Reid knows what he's doing, so he probably just wanted him in to make sure he was physically okay. And as soon as he checked out, he'd probably be like, all right, you're in.
Exactly. I see it playing itself out just based upon that same scenario.
Yep. You know, in the Chiefs, I think they do need to add some firepower. I don't know if they're a little banged up or people are starting to figure out part of their scheme. I mean, they were able to hang on versus the Raiders. The Raiders that have suddenly decided to surge out of nowhere and suddenly started to play for something. Probably because, as you like to say, this time of year, if you're not playing for a championship, you're playing for a job. So I think that's why some of the Raiders are starting to play a little more. I mean, they scored 33 points on the Chiefs. Not that the Chiefs have the best defense, but hanging 33 on somebody who's a perennial Super Bowl favorite is not a bad thing.
Right. And also you got to understand, too, with the Chiefs losing their running back, that's going to probably change a little bit in the dynamics of what they want to do offensively. So I can also see that was another reason why they probably wanted to sign Benjamin. They might very well change the dynamics of their offense. I don't know if they're going to still have the running game at the level of success that they've had with Smith. And now not having Smith it impacts them tremendously. And as a result, especially at this time of the year, where you know all the games count, but more importantly, they're more critical on the back half of your season, based on the way the schedule is structured. So it's going to be real interesting to see what's going on in their mind with that, and I can see the strategy that's going on with that. I think people tend to forget they just lost their running game in a premier running back, so it's going to be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah, and last week I talked about how Reuben Foster had another couple flare-ups 49ers let him go. Washington actually picked him up. I don't think he's going to play again the rest of this year. I think the league's going to make sure of that until they can iron it out. But, yeah, you mentioned Kareem Hunt. He had some flare-ups as well. And to me, the Chiefs, they missed the first opportunity to kind of hit this at the head back when it was first mentioned. But now apparently there's a video and all this other stuff. So I don't know his future, but I would be willing to bet a lot of these guys with the domestic violence issues, especially multiple potential cases against them, I think most of these guys are going to end up out of the league before it's done with. We'll have to see what happens with Kareem Hunt, but it definitely changes the dynamic of the Chiefs. And like you said, maybe that's what Kelvin Benjamin's for, to make them more pass happy.
Yeah, we'll know here pretty soon within the next two games. I'm going to give it two games, and that's going to determine how big of a role and impact that he's going to play in that offense.
Yeah, exactly. The Broncos are a team that have suddenly started putting some things together. They're in another situation, too, where Chad Kelly should be their quarterback, but, you know, he had the flare-up on the blemish on his record that popped up, so he's off the team. Case Keenum's been able to put some stuff together. Looks like they just lost Emmanuel Sanders, who popped his Achilles in a non-contact drill just a couple of days ago. But, I mean, they got the win over the struggling Bengals, who haven't been able to stop anything this year. And worse for the Bengals is Andy Dalton broke or sprained his thumb to where he's out the rest of the year. I think Cincinnati's going to be the next head coaching vacancy we hear about, but unlike what Green Bay did, I think they're going to let Marvin Lewis stick out the rest of the year.
Well, he's been able to weather some tremendous storms in Cincinnati for a long period of time, and it's going to be interesting to see. He's probably one of the longest tenured coaches, in the NFL for quite some time that we've seen. And so it's going to be interesting to see what that organization does as well. I think there are going to be some obvious coaches changes, but then I think there very well might be some that pop up that are going to be surprising, with some coaches retaining their positions as well. So it's going to be really interesting to see what they end up doing as well over in Cincinnati.
Yeah, and for anybody who's watching the game live, yes, do not adjust your screen. Not only is Blake Bortles not starting, but that is Cody Kessler, who is in for the new-look Jaguars. It seems like they have become Oregon and have about 15 different jerseys. They're wearing white on white on, what's that, black shoes with the black helmets. They look like a college team, so, you know, prepare yourself for that. But let's see. I want to get into our picks. Because in the off chance that you need to go while you're traveling I want to get them in, and since you're on, you can actually get a chance to kind of elaborate on a pick. From the looks of it, there's a couple chances we could hear the Homer soundbite, but also let it be known that I'm not the only one who did a few shakeups this week, but and also that nobody was really left on an island, you know, on purpose. Let's start with Detroit at Arizona. For one, we really haven't talked much about Detroit or Arizona much as far as our picks. I think both these teams are kind of starting to put things together. Arizona can't decide if they want a top five pick or a top 10 pick at this point. But they've also had, with David Johnson not running so well, they've actually had a couple breakthrough rookie running backs and undrafted guys that, you know, the future looks pretty bright with all the young guys. They just got to start playing together.
Right. With that pick, I still think that Detroit is the better balanced football team right now. I think Arizona is in its rebuilding phases. And so, for me, in that pick between Arizona and Detroit, I took Detroit specifically for that reason. I think Arizona's on its way, but then, you know, naturally now they're mathematically out. But that team can also be dangerous because those teams that are out now can also play spoiler. So you can't go in taking them lightly, and I don't think Detroit is going to take them lightly.
Well, then without further ado.
It's funny because it's true.
Yeah, we are unanimous on that one. And it's not because Arizona's so bad. No, like we said, these teams are both in similar places, but Detroit kind of has more of their act together. So we all took Detroit in this one. Nothing personal to Arizona. I like where they could go, but this is a rebuild that should have happened 2 or 3 years ago for them. Actually, it should have happened when Kurt Warner retired, and they're just now kind of getting around to it. Carson Palmer did a good job to keep them afloat, but it's really sad that Larry Fitzgerald's last few years were going to work out the way they did.
Yeah, I agree.
Up next, we've got – yeah, let's go to that one next. Minnesota at Seattle.
Okay. It's tough for any team to go into Seattle and win. And I think right now that Wilson is starting to step it up. I think that Seattle is starting to step it up. And I think that the reason I picked them over Minnesota, I think that their team, again, is a little bit more balanced. But more importantly, it's a home field advantage for them. And so I think Seattle pulls that off based upon that alone.
Yeah, I think once again.
It's funny because it's true.
I think we're all in agreement. I wanted to pick Minnesota just to shake it up so that we, you know, didn't homer out on that one too. But, man, the Seahawks have – they're kind of like the Patriots. They go through these little spats early where it seems like the wheels are falling off, and then by the end of everything, here they are just jamming and slamming again. And Seattle is the team I would not want to face in the playoffs right now. Unfortunately, Minnesota is going to be the one that runs into the wrecking ball here. But, see, you know, we're halfway through them, but before we get to the other two, I think we have a caller. Let me see who we got here. Hey, you are on Sports Club Live with Coach and Jeremy.
Good evening, gentlemen.
What's your name and where are you from?
This is Lou from New Jersey, first-time caller, but not to Blog Talk Radio, though.
Ah. Well, what's on your mind tonight, Lou?
Well, you were just mentioning about the Detroit Lions. Now, I mean, Stafford has not, you know, always been cracked up to be. I mean, Detroit still needs a lot of work.
Yeah.
I mean, he hasn't even been to a championship, you know, in his career. And of course, the Lions haven't done anything of anything significant that since like the 50s.
That's true.
I mean, should they even rather even keep Stafford, or do you think it's time for him to go?
Well, I would usually be one to say that they should hang on to him because he is one of those borderline – he's probably the second tier as far as a franchise quarterback. He's a guy that can definitely carry you for a while, but somebody floated out the theory a couple weeks back that now would be a good time – I think it was Peter King, actually, who said now would be a good time if they were to see if maybe the Jaguars or something like that would want the services of Matt Stafford and use what you would get in return to kind of bolster and go in a different direction.
Yeah, the Jaguars are, you know, are already a dumpster fire right now. I mean, they've had a terrible season.
Yeah. And we're watching
them
get even worse on TV.
Tonight. I don't see anything against this game at all.
Yeah, it's been all Tennessee so far from what I can see.
I mean, it's still early, but from the early indications, I think it's going to be a long night for the Jaguars.
Yeah, probably so. Coach, what do you think about keeping Matt Stafford?
Well, again, you know, the biggest thing that organization has to do is look at when they're going into the draft and when they're going into looking into the market, who are they going to replace him with, and can they get value for it? And so – I think at some point they are going to move in that direction and they're going to have to go find them another quarterback, but then they have to strategically look at, you know, what they're going to give up to have to do that and what can they get for him as a result of that. Do they trade him early and try to get, you know, a pick high in the draft to do so? And if so, can Detroit then weather the storm of waiting 2 or 3 years to get that quarterback up to speed as a franchise player? Or do they go after a veteran quarterback? Do they go somewhere and find someone like a Bridgewater, like you mentioned earlier? And I'm just throwing that name out there, not that they're even having a discussion with him, or quarterbacks that are along that line right now that might have been hurt but still has a lot of tread left in their tires and can go and kind of be that bridge until you find what you're looking for. So it's going to be quite interesting to see what Detroit does with that. right now. They're just trying to make sure that they can have a decent season so they can put themselves in a negotiating type of situation with trade or to try to find themselves in the draft strategically looking for what they want.
Lou, who is your team?
You want AFC or NFC?
Both.
All right. For the AFC, well, obviously, your team, that is the Jets, despite the fact that they're less than spectacular season, though I'm not surprised. And my NFC team is the Cowboys.
Oh. See, Coach, there are people all around who think just like me.
And that is...
I see.
And that is... I think you say you think just like you. Now, is that supposed to mean that you're a Cowboys fan, too?
Yeah, I'm the resident Cowboys fan, even though we're based out of Atlanta. I've been a Cowboys fan since birth, thanks to my mom.
And, yeah, well, I've been a Cowboys fan longer than that, probably. Since the 70s.
Oh, wow. Yep. You got me by a little bit.
Yes, I'm that old.
Oh, hold on. No, that's not that old.
Well, to my nephew,
well,
it is.
Well, to my nephew, I'm pretty old, too. But when I had my 8-year-old nephew do his first 5K the other day, and I pushed him to finish it because at some point he wasn't sure if he wanted to. But after he finished it, he looked up at his Uncle Jeremy and decided, you know what, maybe he's not as old as I thought. He was running circles around me.
5K, that brings up memories for me.
Well,
no, I've done 5Ks and 10Ks and done 2 New York City marathons, so it does bring back a lot of memories.
Wow. Wow.
In my younger years.
Let's see. Oh, well, before we let you go there, Lou, we definitely appreciate you calling in. Definitely don't lose our number. We will always do our best to get to you
thanks.
When you call
well,
in.
And the same thing is I have a show of my own on Saturday nights. That way, you're in Atlanta, you said, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. Then we're in the same time zone. It's called the Enhanced Sports Show. We're on Saturday night, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We're located on another service called TalkShoe. The number to reach is 605-562-0444, or 444 in that case. And there's a PIN number to dial, 261-25561, then pound. But after you reach the pound sign, wait for the operator to give you further instructions on reaching the show. Because if you don't listen for that, you're going to get locked out.
Ah. See, there you go. But definitely enjoyed you calling in. For anybody who wants to check out the Enhanced Sports Show, he just gave you all the info on that, Saturday nights and everything. But, Lou, we appreciate you calling in and look forward to talking to you again.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Lou in New Jersey, everybody. Didn't realize he was going to sneak a plug in there, but that works. I've done the same, so I can't get mad. But no, good call. Good caller. We definitely don't mind cross-promoting as well, because that's not saying that at some point I won't find my way on the Enhanced Sports Show and remind everybody that we are usually live right here on Blog Talk Radio at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Blog Talk Radio. So
there you have it.
There you go. You never know what kind of callers we're going to get. That's why anytime I see numbers pop up in our call sheet that I do not recognize and the producer gives me the question mark above his head, I say, why not? Let's see what happens. I say we've only had the one hiccup, and trust me, you will never find that in our archives, so good luck. let's see. We're halfway through the picks. Let's jump in this one because I think the other one's going to be the curveball. Atlanta at Green Bay.
All right. I was hoping that Reggie was on this call so we could have this discussion.
Believe it
or not, for me, this was very tough because the teams right there are similar. And what I mean by that is They're struggling with injuries. They're, you know, Green Bay just lost its head coach, as well as a high-end assistant coach on Tuesday.
Right.
And so now the question is, does this motivate the team or does this deflate the team? That is the truth. That's what's going to be answered against a team like Atlanta on Sunday. I think, again, Aaron Rodgers will do what he does. And I think what you're going to see as the extra that's going to be needed is his leadership. I think he's going to rally this team. I think he's going to look them in the eye. I think he's going to tell them it's not over until it's over. We still have a chance to make the playoffs, and Atlanta is in the way of doing that right now. Likewise for Atlanta, this is it for them. If they do not win and end up in an 8-8 season, it will take a tremendous amount of help, which I don't think that they will get to even give themselves an opportunity to even be considered a wild card team. So I think both teams have got a lot to play for right now. For Green Bay, they're playing for their pride. They're playing for their future. They're playing for some jobs.
Mm-hmm.
For Atlanta, I think the same thing is in play. I think there are some changes that are going to take place at the end of the season. I don't know if that's from head coach or to coordinator. I'm not quite sure. But I do know that Mr. Blank had high expectations for them this year to be able to sit in his owner's box and watch his team play in Atlanta. I think that's every owner's dream is to sit in their box in their own particular facilities and watch their team play for the coveted prize called the Super Bowl and the Lombardi Trophy. So I think this game is going to determine a lot of things for both of the organizations. I think it's going to be one of those games, one of the better play games this year as a result of this. So it's going to be real interesting. I took Green Bay in it naturally because of Aaron Rodgers, because I know what Aaron is capable of doing, and I know how players believe in his efforts. And that's why I took Green Bay. But again, it was a tough pick just because I think both of the teams are right there together. This will be the toss-up game for me. This is the toss-up game. Who is going to dig deep enough with inside themselves as individual players and collectively put that piece together to come out with the win? They both are playing for two different things, but ultimately their survival to keep themselves alive for wild card contention.
Oh, I agree. And I think both these organizations are looking at a very busy offseason. For lack of what could be said, and I don't want it to jeopardize because you probably have friends on both sides of it. We won't get into the high-ranking coach that unfortunately got let go in Green Bay because of the social media message, because I could go all over the map with that particular thing. But, yeah, as far as this one, this game was the only one that we were split 50-50 on, because I agree with you. I think somehow, some way, we're going to see the old Aaron Rodgers, who got what he wanted. He doesn't have to worry about disagreeing with his head coach anymore because his head coach isn't there. And I'm just assuming that's what he may have been one of his end goals. He may not like the fact that McCarthy's gone, but I think the change is going to shake it up. We're going to see the old Aaron Rodgers, like you said, the leadership emerge. We're going to see him just somehow rally the troops. And I think Green Bay is less of a chaotic mess than the Falcons are right now. The Falcons are – they're not – they're as talented as Pittsburgh, and they're just as chaotic and messy. Just for some reason, Pittsburgh does it in a weird way and still wins. So I just think that Green Bay is the stronger team right now, and it's just going to push Atlanta further into – trying to figure out what to do next.
I agree. I agree with you 100%. I think this is going to be the game. Out of any game to watch, I think this is going to be the game to watch on Sunday.
Yeah, I definitely agree. By the way, for people that are keeping score at home, Cody and Reggie, like I said, we were split 50-50. They took Atlanta. Myself and Coach are taking Green Bay. Now, that moves us to the last one. I think this one's going to be a lot more intriguing than many people think. It's honestly the first one I wrote down when I was looking at the games. It's the Baltimore Ravens are going to go to Kansas City to take on the Chiefs and the new Chief, Kelvin Benjamin. Who do you got in this one?
I took Kansas City. I like what the direction Baltimore is going. However, I think that Coach Reed and his ability to have Mahomes play the way that he does, I think he's going to be very methodical with the offense. I think his goal probably going into this game will be control time of possession, which allows Lamar Jackson to have to speed up everything that he does. He's a phenomenal athlete. I watched him in Atlanta. He has great pocket presence. He doesn't get jittery. I think the one thing that hurts him right now is that he doesn't have the timing with the receivers that he would like, and I don't think he quite has been able to control his arm strength. I mean, he can just let a ball go with the velocity that's unbelievable. And I think that, you know, he's still probably maybe two games away from being comfortable, you know, as the starter. So, again, that was my reason for pulling this out with Kansas City, saying Kansas City probably has a little bit more stability right now as the Ravens are still trying to work through a level of comfort for Jackson.
Well, I decided to mess the Homer thing up on this one. All you guys took Kansas City. I'm taking Baltimore because I think a game we're about to get into a little bit, the same way that the Cowboys just went straight up the middle, right in the mouth of the Saints and was able to stifle that offense, I think that's exactly what Baltimore is going to do here. I think Lamar Jackson can make enough plays with some of the weapons they have there that they'll be, it won't be a score fest. You're going to see a very low scoring game like 2017 or something like that. But I'm actually going to take the Baltimore Ravens.
Okay, well, that's good. That's interesting. Like I said, I do like Lamar Jackson. But what I saw against Atlanta, some things that he did against Atlanta, I think Kansas City has enough weapons on the offensive side that they can – I don't think Kansas City is looking to go over the top a lot and try to just beat them through outscoring them with more scores and more time on the clock. I do think that they will, you know, take the profit – kind of just march the ball down the field slowly and as much as they can, take away time that Lamar Jackson will have the ball in his hand because he can't create. That's one of the greatest things that he does well. He creates outside of the pocket. I think if I'm a defensive coordinator for Kansas City, the one thing that I would do to Mr. Jackson is put a tremendous amount of pressure on him up the middle, forcing him to roll, forcing him to have to throw. Or once I can see what he does with that type of pressure coming up the middle, then bring pressure from the outside and contain him or just kind of spy him and force him to have to throw from the pocket. So it's going to be a chess match for sure. But I think that, again, Kansas City's goal probably should be going into this game. Part of their strategy should be making sure that they control time of possession. And the less time the Ravens have it in their hands and they can be up, a field goal or a touchdown on them, then that's going to put the pressure on the Ravens to have to score and then try to get stops quickly to get possessions back. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with it. But, I think that was my reason. I like what they're doing with Lamar Jackson. I do think that he's their future. I just think that right now he's probably still two games away from being comfortable with running the offense. Not that he doesn't have the knowledge of the offense. I think just – it's just game experience is what I'm leaning on at this point.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, he's not quite ready to take it all over and such like that. But to recap real quick, we all took Detroit over Arizona. We all took Seattle at home over Minnesota. Reggie and Cody took Atlanta. We smartly took Green Bay at home. That's something we didn't mention when we talked about that game. But it's hard to beat Green Bay at home because when they're away from home, that's when they have their issues this year. But all you guys took Kansas City at home. I took Baltimore on the road for that one. And before we get into the last game we're going to talk about from last week, the Jaguars just scored. And next round's on me if you can tell me how they scored.
I have no idea because I'm not looking at the game. I said I'm not looking at the game,
okay.
I'm not quite sure how they score.
I say just take a guess, and I'll go ahead and tell you it involves special teams, and it was goofy.
Okay, so I want to say that they kicked off or they punted. Well, give me the situation. Was it a kickoff or a punt, and I can tell you what I think. Give me that much.
I'm not real sure because I wasn't watching. I'm going to guess that it was a kickoff.
Okay, so I want to say it was a kickoff. They went down on the kickoff. Either the guy muffed the kickoff and they scored that way, or he caught the ball without waving them off with a fair catch and muffed it, dropped it, and they scooped and scored, or scooped it and was in great field position to score.
Close. Close. Not close enough to get the next round, but not saying the next round wouldn't be on me anyway. But, no, he caught the ball right around the one or the two, wandered into the end zone, wandered out of the end zone, wandered back into the end zone, and got tackled for a safety.
Oh, got it. Okay.
That's why I said it was completely goofy, and if you can get that, it's probably more than a round I would owe you at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. You're talking about he wandered in, out, and back in, which was the biggest Cardinals scene.
Yeah, I don't think he realized exactly how close he was. Cause like I said, he scooped it up on like the 1.5, started to run sideways. There was actually a referee standing right in the edge of the end zone where he was at, and he kept like trying to run around the referee, and it just didn't go well.
No, it never does, and that's why those guys sprint as hard as they do to get downfield to get certain situations like this. So that was quite interesting, and maybe it won't face Jacksonville. Maybe that was the spark that they needed to come out and compete now.
Yeah, maybe it reminded them there's a football game going on.
Right.
Last game we want to get into, because I am going to finish by talking a little bit, Atlanta United. They do have the MLS Cup this weekend. It's a chance to have another trophy here in Atlanta. And no, it wasn't 95 the last time we had one. Just a couple years ago, the lacrosse team won a world championship, but, depending on how you think about lacrosse, if you want to go ahead and say it's been since 95, then is what it is. But what the Cowboys did after the game, or after our show last week, what the Cowboys did to the Saints on Thursday Night Football was just, it was astonishing, it was baffling, and it was a thing of beauty from the eyes of a Dallas fan. The way we say it all the time, the way that you get at one of these big-time quarterbacks, if you wanted to beat Peyton, you did the same thing. If you wanted to beat Brady, you do the same thing. Any of these, I don't care how good they are, you don't come around the edge. You come straight up the middle. And if you got the power to come straight up the middle, which is why Aaron Donald has twice as many sacks as anybody else in the league, if you can come up the middle and pressure a quarterback and make even a Drew Brees make a decision faster than he wanted to, you typically can stop him.
Yeah, I agree. I think in the draft you're going to see a lot of focus will be placed on interior linemen this year, as well as edge rushers, because again, with quarterbacks becoming more and more athletic, being able to run out the pocket, being able to do some things that they if you have the ability to do it, I think this coming year. I want to forecast it's going to be the year of the linemen, both sides of the ball, offense and defense.
Yep.
I think you're going to find a lot more of those guys being sought after in this draft. Don't get me wrong, you're going to still have your skilled players, but you're going to have teams that are going to have to start getting better in the middle, at center, and at guard. And tackle has always been a premier position, but I think you're going to see more centers and guards this year. There'll be a strategy to draft a few more of those guys this year.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Because, you know, it used to be that you need a franchise quarterback and you need a left tackle to protect them, and then you need somebody who can get after the other quarterback. Well, now it's become even more basic than that. It's can my line defeat your line? And if you win in the trenches, you can typically control the game. And for anybody who doesn't agree
Correct.
With that, I would say go back and watch any Philadelphia Eagles game last year, including the Super Bowl.
Right, I agree with you 100%.
Which is why they're having issues now, is because health and they're not playing quite on the level they were. But it's like I said, we would have never predicted what Dallas did, but at the same time, it was nice to see. And even if I take off my Dallas hat, which with these headphones I can't wear a hat anyway, but even if I take off my Dallas hat, when you see arguably the number one team in the league get stifled by a team that you thought was middle of the pack and just, you know, shouldn't have had a chance in the game, it's always fun to see the little guy win sometimes.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you want to see competition. You don't want to see blowouts. And I think that Dallas was riding a high, and you know, they proved that they were there to continue to compete. And I think it was a humbling experience for the Saints, but then it probably came at the best time for them to lose against the Dallas, because then it probably will remotivate them and energize them too as they finish out the rest of the season. So it's going to be interesting to see how they bounce back from that and what they do moving forward.
Thanks to the text line, I am hearing that it was a muffed punt that ended up being the safety, not a kickoff.
Oh, okay. So I was alone the script then when I said the muff punt. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Although I wouldn't really call it a muff punt, because he never really lost possession of the ball. He just kept wandering into the edge of the end zone and then got tackled there.
Gotcha. Okay.
But either way, not saying that next time we're at the same establishment, next round's not on me anyway. So. But I know you were able to go to. You've been able to make it to a couple Falcons games this year. Have you made it to an Atlanta United game?
I have not, but I can tell you I am quite impressed with what the city of Atlanta and its fan base has done to support soccer. I must admit that I'm not a big soccer fan. I don't quite understand the strategy. I understand the movement in the game, but I don't quite understand the strategy and those intricacies in it. But I can tell you right now, Atlanta is kudos to our fan base here and how they have supported. I think when I was listening over the last 3 years, they have sold, I'm talking about actual ticket sales, over 900,000 tickets, meaning that they're selling out every game. And that's a lot of people. And it amazes me when you go past there and you see, you know, close to 80-something thousand people, you know, coming out of the Mercedes-Benz Stadium for a soccer game. And you can tell the stadium is kind of built for soccer, because if you've ever been in the old Georgia Dome versus the new Mercedes-Benz, the one thing I was able to notice was that although the facility is larger in size, the seats are smaller. The seats are much smaller. It's built like a soccer stadium. And meaning that you don't have any really truly bad seats in the house. You know, 300 section is pretty high up. But, again, I noticed that one thing that changed was that the seats were a lot smaller and they're a lot more compacted. And so I guess at a soccer game, people stand up most of the time and just they got their seat there just when they get a little tired in their legs. But it seems like from what I was able to see, they were standing up the entire 2 hours of the game or whatever. And I'm like, wow. But I have not had a chance to see them play, and I'm hoping that we walk away with this MLS Cup.
Yeah, me too. I've been to a handful of games in both seasons now, including one of the playoff games a couple weeks ago. I agree, there is no bad seat in the house. I've sat on the 100 level in the super fan section. I've sat up in the 300 level a couple times. I've sat in one of the 200 level suites. I've sat all over the place, and it doesn't matter where you sit, you're going to have a good time. The tailgating, as good as Falcons tailgating is, soccer tailgating is like a whole different animal. And I'm not going to say it's better. They're both exceptionally great in Atlanta for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, especially down in the Gulch area, you get a lot of times you'll get a drum line, people shooting off flares and fireworks safely, obviously. There are adult beverage vendors that are basically handing stuff out. There are food vendors. There are people that sell things down there. Plus, on top of everybody else who is, I mean, there's people that just bring their trumpets and their snare drums and just play themselves. And it's just one big, gigantic event. And there's just random parades that break out. There's a lot of times where team-affiliated groups will do events down there. I got some friends that do the people that do the Soccer Down Here podcast. They do a pregame down there. And everybody thinks that it's not family-friendly, but I assure you, the last time I was there, there was about at least 200 kids, and about 100 of them were on the moonwalk slide that I was trying to get onto. So it's just a whole different atmosphere, and it has been fun to watch Atlanta embrace soccer so quickly. As far as understanding it, what helped me, and I will give total credit to my wife on this, is one night a couple years ago, we were at a Joe's Crab Shack, and I said, all right, explain soccer to me. And I got out some little sugar packets, and I said, all right, in hockey, you do this, and in this scenario, these people shift here, and these people shift here. And all she did was grab a handful more packets, throw them out, and say, same thing, but these people will move this way when that happens and this way when that happens. So me understanding hockey strategy, she just said it's on a more escalated scale because there's twice as many people there. So you coming from a football background, I can see where you're kind of like, now, why did they do that?
Right, correct. So for me, it's going to take me becoming a student of the game and just having someone teach me some of the strategies when they're playing. But again, whatever we have at a head coach over with the Atlanta United, they seem to have it together, and they seem to be rapidly hungry and pushing for becoming champions. And again, I'm hoping that this weekend they walk away with the trophy.
Yeah, I'm definitely right there with you on that. Even though this will be the last game of the MLS season, I will try to nail down exactly. I haven't been able to follow the English Premier League, which is one of the best leagues in the world. I'll try to find the teams that are playing pretty good strategy-wise and pretty distinct, and I'll try to kind of let you know which ones to kind of study, and one's more this way, one's more that way, and maybe it'll help a little bit because I don't still fully understand it, but I have enough friends that are soccer fanatics that I can randomly text them at 1 o'clock in the morning and say, hey, I stayed up watching this game here. Did this happen? And why did this happen? And they're able to at least give me an answer. So that's always a good thing.
Okay. Well, that's great. Maybe I can become your student.
Yeah. Like I said, I can try to give you some of the teams to watch and for certain reasons and the various players and such like that. It's not as complicated as it sounds, but yeah, it took me a little while to get into it. But for everybody who does want to know, that's this Saturday at 8 p.m., of course, at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I did actually get Reggie about a month or so ago to admit that Mercedes-Benz Stadium is a soccer stadium that allows the Falcons to play football at. So he agrees that it's a soccer stadium all the way around.
Yeah, most definitely. If you had a chance to visit a soccer stadium, you'll be able to see there are a lot of striking resemblances in the infrastructure.
But I guess that's going to do it for us. I appreciate everybody joining us, and obviously you, Coach, for joining us as well. I know you're still in the process of traveling and getting some other stuff done. It is a super busy time of year for everybody in the industry that you do right now, and safe travels.
Thank you, sir.
And like I said, once again, thanks for joining us. We will see everybody next week here on Sports Club. And to answer the question, because this was Sports Club, so what now? Falcons fans, what you need to do is win this week. And after, depending on if you win this week or not, you could start seeing wholesale changes now, or you may see him at the end of the year, but just know you're trending in the right direction. Packer fans, 49er fans, Cowboy fans, Falcons fans, everybody all in between that we cover here, those four teams are trending up. So, you know, keep your chin up. It's going to get better. But, Coach, we will see you later on down the road, and we will see all you guys next week.
Okay.
Taking the cake, so let's make. I'm taking the game, the game's mine. Yeah, I witness the change, it's my time. Yeah, I'm new to the game, but y'all might wanna say you whack rap, stay light, save the time. I can dance, homie, I don't choose, yeah. Y'all looking at something like a true player. A girl told me that a man that can dance might could possibly get down with the tool in his pants. Now I'm a lady, let me see it vibrate. And when it's over, you ain't gonna need your bird. Cause I'm a pro, make you bend your back low, then the pound it real fast, just like the percolate.
Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah. Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah. Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah. Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah.
Was that not clear without the bam? Yeah, okay. Bam! What?